Welcome to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Andras Goggin, a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Andras Goggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I'm joined by local talent, longtime friend, and our producer, Mark Turcotte. Together, we explore how incredible people, the voices of Andras Goggin, build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all. Welcome. It's Shanna. Just so great to have you all back again. Thank you. Listeners, thank you. Turns out, I was recently reminded, if you're listening to our fourth episode today with Ray Dumont, you are going to hear more about him in a second. You should probably subscribe and like us. Comment. It doesn't matter what you're commenting. Support us because we love these amazing stories that we have the voices of Andras Goggin to spread. So welcome. Today, I'm joined by Ray, who is just fabulous. And I am so excited for today's episode. Let me tell you a little bit about Ray before we dig in. So Ray is overjoyed to come back to his hometown with his partner, Josh, as the executive director of the Public Theater. He grew up in Lewiston, was educated in Lewiston schools. Most recently, he was director of development for Theater Aspen after 2 years as associate education director at the Ogunquit Playhouse. You attended Boston University School of Management. That's where he majored in finance and marketing, and he's a proud member of the Actors Equity Association since 1995.
I'm old.
Yeah, I was not going to put a number on that, but I was like, which school age was I? Ray's been working in professional theater for more than 30 years. Mm-hmm. He's been a performer, an educator, a director, a choreographer. Oh, if we could only get some video of some dance moves in the room today. And producer. Although his career has taken him literally all over the country, Maine's always been your home base. He's enjoyed 20 seasons at Maine State Music Theater, which I am fortunate to go to every one of their summer shows and love, including 4 incredible years as the managing director from 99 to 2003. During those years, Maine State Music Theater refurbished a former bus garage into its current production and administrative home in Brunswick. So that was part of your work?
That was the first big capital campaign they've ever done.
That was a big part of your
work.
Yeah,
we all walked away slightly scathed. Yeah.
In ways that have made you stronger.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure.
Battle scars, yeah.
Ray is dedicated to creating art that starts conversations, brings people together, and improves the quality of life in our communities, all the while providing great entertainment right here in Lewiston and Auburn. Maybe one of my most favorite bios to read ever.
That's my stump bio that goes out everywhere.
I love it because there is joy written into every part of your life, apparently, and the way we get to talk about it, which is fantastic. Never would have thought you've been doing this for 30 years. That's, of course, including your like sixth grade production or something.
Right. I started as a wee lad. last Friday, I turned 58 years old.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And to quote Roxy Hart from the musical Chicago, I'm older than I ever thought I'd be.
The part about aging is realizing every once in a while you really have to like fully recalculate what the next stage of adulthood actually means, what your vision of you
and
in those time frames
look
like.
Do not try to predict anything.
No.
Go with the flow. Yeah. I mean, because not to disclose something terrible, but I lived a little hard and a little fast for a while. I literally thought I'd be dead by now.
I mean, I like to calculate it as I had my fun.
Right, I had my fun.
I had some great fun.
But here I still am, relatively healthy, which means now I got a plan.
I know.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. It's a disappointing reality.
It's dumb. I don't like it.
I'm a big set your North Star, but don't put your map in place.
Right. Oh, that's good.
Do you know what I mean? Like, know the direction you want to head in.
Yeah.
Sure, but
I know the world I want to live in. Yeah. It just, that changes. That changes.
Constantly.
Yeah, it's the arts. It's what I do. It's what I love. It's what makes my heart beat fast, but I don't have to do it in one place. Yeah. I've moved, clearly.
Yeah.
And it's great.
You don't have to do it in place or in one way.
Right.
And I think part of my, like, leaving my youth behind, not just in career, but in my personal life, is, like, realizing I pictured my North Star and expected, like, I was going to A, B, C, D.
Right.
And realizing that, like, somehow I started in the middle of the alphabet, never made it to A.
Right.
Didn't do anything linear.
Oh, God, no.
No, no.
I've had no business being a dancer for as long as I was. I didn't dance as a child. I started late in life.
What kind of dance are we talking about here, Ray?
Jazz, tap, musical theater.
You did, right, of course.
I'm a tap dancer.
Tap is fun.
Tap is fun.
I grew a love for tap that I didn't expect I would have. First of all, I'm Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Oh, great show.
Yes, that and White Christmas are two, like, I grew up on them.
My fiance is working on White Christmas right now in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's too far away for me to go visit.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to visit after the holidays.
Oh, it's one of my favorite all time. So I'm just going to pause for a second and tell you my White Christmas truth.
Do it.
This is a little bit embarrassing.
We're here for you.
I love White Christmas. I've always loved White Christmas. I've always seen the movie. Maybe 6 years ago, my partner got me tickets to a live production in South Portland that was like definitely a community theater production, and I was over the moon excited. I squealed, teared up, just skippy in my seat through the entire performance, and the whole time my partner is like, nailed this gift. She's loving it. Break in the last scene. Where, if folks haven't seen White Christmas, I don't know what's wrong with you, go do it.
Right.
But it's the break in the last scene, and it is the part in which they open the doors.
The barn
doors.
It's
snowing outside, and all of a sudden the audience joins in. Now, in the movie, the audience is still in the movie. But in reality, the audience live joins in.
The audience, yeah.
Lost my cookies. Sobbing.
Everybody gets to sing.
All I wanted to do was sing along, and it was like my life dream, and I was so verklempt by the whole experience. I couldn't get a word out, and Chad looks over at me, and I'm like sobbing, not participating at all, and he can't read that these are absolute tears of joy and overwhelm and nothing else. And so, like, I'm still not able to pull myself together. Mm-hmm. We leave at the end, and then maybe two blocks away as we're walking toward the... He's like... Was it awful? And I was like, oh my God, it was the best thing. I like just blubbered, complete joy. And so I went to see it at Mainstay Music Theater this summer. They did Christmas in July.
Yeah.
And went with two of my friends and prepped them. Hey, the last time I saw this live, kind of lost complete control. And I might embarrass you, and I'm sorry. And my friend is on the board of Mainstay Music. So I'm like, do you want me to sit somewhere else?
Right.
Do you want to pretend you don't know me? Do you want me to arrive separately? I understand. You might change your mind about leaving once you see what happens in there. No amount of me being prepared or preparing them allowed any of us to be prepared for the fact that I did all of that over again and was like a sobbing mess.
Mm-hmm.
Theater moves people.
It's transformational.
It literally is. And
And you never know what chord it's going to play on you.
No.
You just don't know.
No.
You know, it can be, you can go see a show you've seen a million times. I do this a lot. I've seen the same show done by millions of companies, the Broadway company, local companies, touring companies. And I'll see somebody do a scene slightly different than I've ever seen it before, or someone says one line differently than I've ever heard it before, and suddenly it's an entirely new game for me.
Yeah.
And I'm so inspired by that because you hear
something. Do you weep and blubber?
Oh, I cry all the time.
Thank you.
I cry at happy, I cry at sad, I cry at curtain calls. I cried when my friend went on for his first... He's been in the ensemble of two Broadway shows, but without much notice, he covered a lead in Once Upon a Mattress on Broadway right now. He was one of my performance interns at Main State back in 2018, I think it was. And he's done very well for himself. And he posted a video. He said, without much notice, I went on as the wizard tonight. And I saw him take his first bow as a principal, which is a lead role.
Yeah.
I cried uncontrollably. I watched it over and over again.
See?
Because I'm so proud. I think of them all as my kids.
Yeah.
Actually, he was one of my interns that called me mom.
Aww.
Yeah, I have a couple that called me mom.
I would see this makes me feel seen.
Oh, yeah.
Not abnormal. I like to think that the performers are like, oh, we did our thing for that sobbing pile of mess in the audience. That worked for her.
It means more than you think it does.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
It's hard. You know, yes, in everything you do, there are times when it is just a job. But it's less so, at least in my personal experience and the people I have worked with and have had the honor of working with. We actually really do care about that we mean something. We mean something. Like what we did matters to them. And I remember we were all sick. I was doing Hello Dolly. We were all sick. A stomach flu worked its way through the cast.
That's
and
the
we
worst.
Had a miserable performance. I was the dance captain and I was moving people in and out of numbers. I covered almost the entire the waiter's gallop number because most people were half dead. But I remember at intermission, we were all laying on the green room floor because it was cold and we were pressing our faces. And the director happened to be in town to come see the show to check on it. And he came in and he said something really profound, I guess, in his own way. He said, "Guys, I'm so sorry to hear. I heard that you guys are sick. That's so sad. And good job. You're doing great so far. You're doing great." He goes, "I just need you to know something. The audience doesn't care that you're sick. They're here to see a show. And it means something. We have to show up for them. It's a different world right now. And performers call out for really silly reasons for shows. And it's great that the understudies go on and the swings go on, because during COVID, they proved their worth, that they are worth their weight in gold. But to call out of a show because this is, I'm not going to tell you where I heard this, but there was a show in which one of the young ensemble members called out because she'd just broken up with her boyfriend the night before and she just couldn't pull it together. And I'm sorry.
Ray, you are every employer right now.
I am so sorry to hear that. And I'm not trying to bring down the room or anything, but I went to rehearsal the day after my son died.
Yep.
Because I needed to go to rehearsal.
Yeah.
And my cast pulled together and they made me feel so loved. Because I was out of town when it happened. We were rehearsing in Pennsylvania. And I needed them.
Yeah.
And they would have given me a pass to step out of.
Of course.
But I didn't. You know, even my partner is now my fiance. We have not set a date.
Congratulations.
We have not set a date. But, you know, he was like, "You got to go to work. Go." And that's what I was told to do. And I did. And it was everything I needed. People calling out, you know, what we do matters. And I think that's what I'm doing as an executive director now, is telling people, we're here, everybody. And we actually are not just a luxury. We're a necessity.
I think that.
That's number one.
Yeah, I think that.
Number one on my hit parade, to be noticed, to be that people are aware that we are here, because it's amazing who doesn't know that we're right here down the street.
All right, so we're gonna get to know you a little bit better. What do we call this segment, Mark?
This is
getting to know you.
Getting to know all about you.
Oh.
Okay, pop quiz, where's that from?
Oh, you know this was going to happen. Mark is my ringer for all pop trivia, so I'm going to rely on him.
Do you know what that's from?
I don't.
It's from Rodgers and Hammerstein's The King and I.
Oh.
Mrs. Anna sings it to the royal children to try to get them to like her.
Did it work?
Eventually, yeah.
And we hope our podcast grows on you in the same way. See, you'd think we knew the backstory to that.
Okay.
Getting to know you.
Yes, getting to know you is a relaxed, engaging segment where we ask our guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help listeners learn about and connect with our guest on a personal level.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Ray.
Yeah.
What is a book, show, podcast, or movie that has inspired you recently?
Okay, well, I'm going to interpret show as a Broadway show.
It can absolutely mean that.
And I've been influenced by many, but the one that I always come back to is A Chorus Line.
Good choice.
It is our story. It's a dancer's story, but it's also fairly universal. And there's certain lines in that show that I can't get out of my head. There's just moments in that show I can't get out of my head. And when I think of how it was created, done in the first workshop process, which is literally learning the show section by section and second by second. And there was barely an outline to the show before he said, "I think I have something here."
Huh.
And I don't know if you know the story of it. Michael Bennett, the famous director who created that show, got a bunch of dancers in a room and they recorded them, asking them questions about their childhood and why did you start dancing and what do you find hard? And they were really forthcoming with information, and they had all these tapes on these reel-to-reels, and they took those tapes and turned it into a show about dancers, and they set it at an audition.
Huh.
And some of these people, like, it was funny, they said, you know, in the course of developing the show, suddenly my story was given to somebody else because it augments their piece better, you know, and it developed and developed. But that show has a profound, like, meaning to me. A few years into my career as a dancer, I had the opportunity to do the show with one of the original tape session people.
Oh, wow.
Her story was the story of Val, the character of Val, who had the breast augmentation and the buttock lift and all that, the TNA number.
Yeah, yeah.
It's politely called Dance 10 Looks 3. That's what it's called in the show.
I was pretty sure it was the TNA number.
Because you don't want to give away TNA
right
to the program. You want it to be a surprise.
Sense.
But her story was that. She was Val, and she didn't play Val originally. They gave it to somebody else.
Oh, wow.
And then she did it eventually on Broadway, and then she did it in London and all that. But I got to learn the show from her. So not only do you get the direction, but she goes, do you want to know why she says that? Do you want to know why? And it just, I was a sponge. I was taking it all in. And so much of that process is something I use when I direct a show.
Huh.
And I was also with some of the kindest people I've ever... They welcomed me in. Half of them had done it on Broadway. I'd never done it. So I felt like I was way behind.
Right.
And I used to go behind the mirrors. We had these rollaway mirrors. I used to go behind the mirrors and just run the jazz combination over and over again. And finally, it was the Cassie, the big dance role in the show. She had just finished playing it on Broadway. And she said, she goes, you know you got this, right? You got it. I'm watching you. You got this. And it was all I needed.
Sometimes hearing that,
mm-hmm.
I actually had one of those moments today with a colleague where, you know, throughout this whole meeting, you didn't contribute anything. And I'm just like wondering where you were with the conversation mm-hmm. we were having. And it was with like a third party. And he's like, there was nothing I needed to add. You covered
you
it all.
It.
You'd thought of the things you, and I was like, maybe I need to hear that. And
yeah.
I think he was like, do you? Because I'm surely a pretty confident lady. And,
sure.
You know, but yes, we all need to every once in a while be like, oh, as I forge into this new space, it is helpful to hear.
Yeah.
Right?
It really is.
Yeah.
Just that little tick in the right direction. That's all I need.
So what's one, at the risk of an earworm that's going to invade us for the rest of today, what's one line that sticks to you?
Oh, there's, it's the role of Diana. She tells this story. Toward the end of the show, one of the actors gets hurt, and they have to take him off stage, so he's completely out of the running, and he would have gotten the show, this character, Paul. And he just finished this amazing monologue, and during the tap combination, he rolls an ankle and goes down. And everybody is, like, freaking out, and so they get his dance bag, they get him off stage, and then all of a sudden, there's just this quiet, very still on stage, and all the other dancers are kind of feeling it. And the director says, what would you do when you can't dance anymore?
Mm.
And one of them goes, kill myself. And he goes, no, really, what would you do? And some people are talking about, I can't wait. I'm going to have 10 kids. I'm going to live in the country, and I'm going to enjoy getting fat. I'm going to dance around my kitchen, and I'll be thrilled. And everybody had, you know, and they're saying they're not doing shows with big choruses anymore. Mind you, this was the 70s, so they were reflecting what the industry was like then. But this girl, this character, Diana, says something about... She goes, what's wrong with you all? She goes, you know, I get depressed too. She goes, but I remember when I was a kid and I stood outside that stage door and I saw those people come out of the door with their eyelashes and their makeup. And she says, and I said, I'll never be that old. I'll never be that old. And it's just this moment where she goes, well, I've come this far and I'm not giving up now. Because she is one of those people that comes out of the stage door. And I watch people watch. I'm not a stage door person. I don't need signing my program and stuff. But I'll tend to go there because I usually have a friend on the show or something. And I watch them come out, and I see the joy they're bringing to these people.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is taking a picture with them and signing a program. But, you know, you work really hard to get a little bit of love like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's when she says it, when I direct the show, I'm so... on top of that scene, like it's so important to me that
it hits the way
it has to be real.
Yeah.
And if at the risk of going too far on a tangent, Michael Bennett was known for using tactics in directing a show that sometimes weren't particularly nice. And they were working on a combination on stage, and he told one of the actors to fall down. And oh no, it was him. He fell. He was doing just a little double turn, and he went boom, and he hits the floor. He faked it. And everybody freaked out, and they're running to him, and all of a sudden he stands up and he goes, everybody remember what you just did. And some of the cast members started to cry. Some
right.
of them were angry. He had to find out what your visceral reaction would be to watching someone fall down. Because your visceral reaction might be, oh good, no competition.
Right.
You know? And that's not something we all want to admit, but it
yeah.
could happen. But there, every time, all my roads seem to come back to Chorus Line for some reason, you know?
I love that it's not just about the outcome for you, like the impact that that had or what the performance looks like, but that for you it's also about the process and the way that it changed, not just your work, but
everything.
Theater.
It changes, well, the show changed theater for sure. And, you know, all of us who've gotten to do it, I never did it on Broadway or in a big...
How high can you kick?
I was able to kick over my head.
Don't pretend you weren't thinking it, Mark.
But we had... In the finale where there's the kick line, yeah. There's rules of how high you kick.
Yes.
It's all very specific. There are 40... What is it? 48? 52? I forget how many kicks there are in the end because it fades out on the line.
Yeah.
And that's like... There's all these rules. But so often... And I actually just said it the other day at my Into the Woods rehearsal. I say the same three words. Trust the process.
Yeah.
You know, like last night we gave them a bunch of props they'd never used before. I said, it's okay. I know you're going to fumble with them. Trust that I see you. Don't worry. Don't think I didn't see you fumble with the basket.
Yeah.
We're going to fix that. I just want to get it in the game.
Yeah.
You know, so trust the process. And that show really was about a process that never existed before.
That's crazy. Yeah. I think trust the process is a bit of universal advice.
Well, that's the thing about the show. It's universal.
Yeah.
Everybody puts themselves on the line for something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
We might have already covered this. Huh? Maybe when you give me the answer to how high you can kick. What's a surprising skill or talent you have outside of work?
Outside of work?
And you strike me as the kind of guy who's like, what's outside of work? Because
everything is...
Yeah, because it all blurs. Which, by the way...
I live a very theatrical
zero
life.
Zero judgment. I firmly live in that same sector of like... It's all blurry, but
well, something
so
that
to the
I
extent
do outside of the outside of performance that I don't do as much anymore for the obvious reasons is that I was a pretty good tumbler. I was a gymnast.
Oh,
that's how I came to movement with
spring
through gymnastics.
Bounce and all of the. Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying
to work in when I can get that in front of people.
It just needs to be. I'm good if it's like all I need is a good lawn or you know something soft like the beach.
Yeah.
And a couple of Coronas and I'm good.
Awesome. I'll bring you Coronas.
And all I have left though is a round off and a back handspring. I don't do anything else anymore.
That's an amazing talent and skill. It does feel related. You must have utilized it. Is it what brought you to...
It got me a lot of work because I know that there were dance calls I was at that I was not nearly as good as some of the other guys. But my energy was good and I tried to be as positive as I could and... I always
and
had that I could tumble.
And then you also bounced around like
that. Yeah, and so usually when you get toward the end of an audition, they'll say, does anyone have tricks that they want to show? And so some people will do, you know, whatever they do. And I said, well, I can do a tumbling pass. And they said, okay, do whatever you do. And back then I could do a really good one. So I'd cover a lot of ground. And they always thought, you know, this little man flying through the air was worth hiring.
Yeah.
And that was nice. Plus, in shows that where there was tap, I always did well in those auditions, so that was fun. A good chunk of my career, it was in a sailor suit and tap shoes, because, you know, you do enough anything goeses and dames at seas and stuff like that, you end up wearing a sailor suit a lot.
Yeah.
And that was great. But I'd get kept, even though I wasn't the best dancer, but they wanted to use those other skills in the show. And then they used me appropriately.
Yeah.
And I'd always get a little pushed. Which
I would
great.
Say there is a lesson in there about when people have diverse skills that, oh, this came up last time. What's the phrase? Master of none. Something, something, master of none.
Oh, jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades.
Master of none.
Yeah. Like there is very much something, particularly in our overall workforce mm-hmm. where we are, that like being able to fill multiple positions, having different skills
and
will benefit
gotten,
you more than being really great at this
and
one thing.
That's universal. Yeah. That's any job.
Yeah.
But certainly for performers particularly, that's become even more important. It's become a foregone conclusion that you can do
multiple
X,
things.
Y, and Z. There are times where you're getting ready to start rehearsals and they expect you to have all your music learned, which means you have to be able to read music if it's a new show or there's a lot of harmonies and stuff. Some people don't read music. I don't. I can find my way through it, especially when I'm choreographing. I kind of know what it's going to be and I know how to count it and all that. And then I can read in the orchestrations where there's like accents and that's fine. But I can't like look at it and hum it. It's not going to happen. But it's become a foregone conclusion that you know how to do certain things now. If you play an instrument, that's big now. You know, there's all kinds of things. Yeah, the requirements have gone up. I don't think I couldn't, with the skill set I had back in the 90s and the early 2000s, I couldn't
start
compete.
Your career.
I couldn't compete now.
Well, it's a good thing you have 30 years of experience.
Thank God I got the hell out of it.
To.
Yeah, no. That's why I got on the other side of the table. It's a lot happier over there for me.
So that's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
What will you do someday?
Yeah,
You'll direct a theater.
I mean, one of the things I haven't done yet and that I started and I need to finish is I want to write. I'm writing a book about my son. I started writing it when we adopted him. And I thought, you know, the adventures of a gay couple trying to raise their kid in a straight world. And I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
But in Portland, that's just Tuesday, you know, so nobody cared. And so I thought, you know, but now that he's come full circle and the ride we all had getting there and how we navigated depression and all that, I said, there are some stories there I feel like I need to share that are actually really uplifting. It's not a sad story.
Right.
99% of the time when I think of him, I smile. It's that other 1% once in a while I just get sad. I was directing a scene in Into the Woods, and it was about a father and a son. It's called No More, and I fell apart.
Yeah.
And it literally hit me like a thunderbolt. I had no warning that I was going to start feeling teary. I just churned it back into the work, and it was great. You know, I have this outlet. I have a place to feel those things in a constructive way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write someday.
Is it a book, or is it
a
play?
That's a book. I have a couple plays in mind and a couple short stories. And they're just things I've scribbled, and I keep them in a list somewhere, and we'll get back to it.
Well, you've easily got another 58 years ahead of you.
Right.
So take your time on those. Yeah.
What's the thing? I'm going to live forever, but not outside of an institution.
Yeah. That one's a good one. I'll add that one to my thinking. What is your go-to productivity hack when you're feeling overwhelmed?
You've
already described a life that's super busy.
I like to write lists.
Mm.
I'm a list guy. It's really terrible. Like, I'll write things that I know are stupid things, but I can actually put a line through it.
I love that. Sometimes you just go and add those things so you can check it off as you're reflecting.
I mean, I can't just write, you know, get up, kick butt. That's not really going to do it.
No.
But like, you know, put away laundry.
Nailed it.
Do dishes. Do groceries, which I was going to do anyway. And it just feels good. And like in the last month or so, and then in the coming couple of months, I've got a ton of grants that have to be written. And I'm writing down lists every day about, like, you know, send these 3 emails. At least do that. I need to know that I did something.
So are you paperless?
No. Nope.
How do you do it?
I have scrap pieces of paper.
Yeah.
My office looks like a hovel. It's disgusting.
Somewhere absolutely. I heard, and I don't actually know if I can give you research, but I heard that shows that people are highly efficient and productive. Messy offices, piles of paper, lists.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting it done.
I mean, stuff's getting done. I also have to allow myself to leave the office without getting it all done.
Yeah.
It's not going to get all done.
It's never going to be all done.
No, it's never all done.
No.
And, you know, the nature of what I'm doing right now or trying to attempt to do is daunting. And I have to allow myself some breathing space to go, you know what, you don't have to accomplish that right now. It's not going to happen right now. There are obstacles that have to be dealt with before you get that. And, you know, and I'm one of those people, I want to do it now or I'm no good at this.
Yeah.
And I have to get that thought out of my head and just say, I'm going to do what I can do today.
Yep.
Or this month or this year even. Having this other project in Portland right now has been a nice balance for me because there I'm the artistic lead on the on that show. Whereas here I'm the administrative and producing lead on the show.
Yeah.
And it's a very different world. I really enjoy working my artistic muscles. It feels good to have that.
Yeah.
Because that's the soul stuff. What I do over here is the mind stuff initially, and then that's the soul stuff. But over there, it's really the soul. And I just happen to have been blessed with 17 of the most talented people to do the show. 97 people auditioned for that show.
Wow.
And I had to choose 17.
What's the name of the show and when
Into
can we
the
go
Woods.
See it?
It's in December, opens December 6th. Into the Woods is a musical by Stephen Sondheim. It's a grown-up musical about the fairy tales.
Nice.
And Act 1 gets to Happily Ever After, and Act 2 is Happily Ever After later.
Nice.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, prices to be paid for behavior.
I know it's one of the classics that I haven't had a chance to see.
It's a great show.
Yeah. As a parent, so, right, I have 4 kids
who
are, you know, 20 through pretty much 18 at this point. We've always loved live performances and what they were doing at school, through school, and even what we had access to do as a family.
Mm-hmm.
COVID changed so much, and I feel like arts, culture, humanities, they all played instruments and they were in bands.
Yeah.
And I watched their band go from like 60 students to 20 and have spent 4 years rebuilding to get to like maybe 45 now.
Yep.
And so I imagine that
my industry was the first thing to close by nature of the fact that we all gather close together.
Yeah.
And it was the last thing to reopen.
I remember.
And
it was painful.
It was hard. And they're still building back.
Yeah.
And there's people that are nervous about being with other people. Yeah. They'd rather do something else. And they've gotten used to not doing those other things.
Yeah.
So now they stay home.
Yeah.
Or they want an earlier night. In fact, we made our Thursday and Friday night shows 7 o'clock instead of 7:30 so that it's appealing to some people that want to get home at what is considered a reasonable hour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Dracula was a short show. Christmas Carol's a short show. The one in January is a shorter show. But there'll be fuller length shows in March and May. And we still want to accommodate people who want an earlier curtain time so they get home earlier.
People's behavior really has changed.
It's
impacting every industry.
I will tell you, the other thing that really made people think twice was the mass shooting.
Yeah.
Because gathering in a space where you see the exits, but...
Yeah.
And you don't see what's coming on behind you and everything. I understand that. I get it.
Yeah.
I was interviewing for this job when that happened.
I remember, like, literally.
Literally. I was supposed to interview on that Friday. Yeah. It happened on Wednesday. They, of course, canceled the interview, and the shows got canceled. The performances, it was a show called Paint Night. And then they asked me, they called me on Saturday. They said, well, since they found the guy, we're going to do our Sunday show. Do you want to come? And I said, yeah, get me a ticket. I want to come. And they were like, we're not even sure who's going to come. It was packed. There was a police officer parked in front of the building. I went in, and everybody was there, you know, but we were, you know. Janet Michko, our artistic director, made a beautiful speech right before the show saying, you know, it was a curtain speech like I do every night. And she just said, it's important for us to be a community. And this is a way to do that. And we're happy we can be part of that landscape. So the show starts, and the first 10 minutes, it was, I'm sure for the actors, it must have been like performing in front of an oil painting of an audience. Everyone was all tense.
Yeah.
And about 10 minutes in, somebody let out a big old laugh because something was funny in the play. And you felt 300 people kind of collectively exhale.
Yeah.
And I was witnessing that going, oh my God. Mm-hmm. That has that, like, a live performance has that power to do that. Granted, that's an extreme example, but it was one of the things that fortified my need to have that job. Yeah. I had to have that job.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, me too.
You spent a lifetime in the arts economy, specifically theater. What is it that you wish people better understood about the contributions the arts and culture make to local economies and communities? Because I think that's what part of what you're talking about. And, you know, from a little background to that, from a chamber perspective, I think at different periods in our chamber's history, we have interacted with arts and culture in different ways, and we have recognized the contributions arts and culture has made in different ways, programmatically, prior leaders. It's been an ebb and a flow, shall we say.
Sure.
140-year history.
Yeah.
Nowhere near all of that's mine, right?
Right.
But that's real.
Oh,
and
very
that's
much so.
Part of what, and we've seen what you just named as that kind of collective exhale and the importance of that to a community and to economy. I got the privilege to witness some of that following COVID.
Sure.
When people started to have shows again, when restaurants started to be open, when the pairing of dinner and a show came back. And so, like, there are so many ways that I've been able to actually see with real people, real servers, real actors, right? Like, what the impact, real comedians. I think a comedy show was one of the first things that opened
very
back
important.
Up.
Yeah.
And so, what is it you wish people knew?
I think sometimes people think that it's that what they see is all that's happening. There's a show, it was fun. Why are you asking us for money? Why, you know, and that's truly very much the tip of an iceberg. You know, there's so much that has to go into producing professional theater. There's a lot of work involved. And the people that we hire are dedicated to that craft. And that's what professional means, you know?
Yeah.
And it's their job, it's their lives, you know? One thing that's hard is that it's hard to make the case for the importance of having a professional theater in your community when your base needs are not being met. If you're struggling with rent, with food costs, with heating costs, it's hard. It's the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's hard to think of that as a necessity. Economically, I mean, the studies are always out there. You know, for every dollar spent here, another 10 is spent someplace else, and it livens the economy and everything. But there's a bigger scope that I think people are forgetting. Yes, there's an economic component. It brings people to a location, and hopefully they'll do something else if there's something else to do there. And it's our job to let them know there's something else to do there and that we're all part of the same, you know, a rising tide lifts all the boats, you know? Yeah. But there's so much more to the health of a community than just its economy. Mm-hmm. The mental health component of live theater has been profoundly studied, and the results, the things that people are bringing up, particularly arts education, how it's contributing to the mental health of these young people, so that when they are, as they grow older, they have the confidence, the self-esteem, and the coping skills to navigate the tough waters so that they can actually be contributing members of society and healthy. Theater has always been a place for the misfits. You know, all of us kids who didn't fit in. I didn't fit in high school. I found theater and I was suddenly, you know, welcomed. I did arts education for 2 years at the Algonquin Playhouse, and there was this sweet girl who is horribly bullied in school all year long, and her only place that she feels good is when she comes and does our summer camps.
Yeah.
You know, I was not confronted. I ran into somebody that I knew. I used to do the musicals at Yarmouth High School. This young man approached me. He goes, "Do you remember me?" I said, "Of course I remember you." And I said his name. I won't say it over the thing. But he was a puppeteer for a show we did. It was really cool. And I was choreographing the show, so I needed the puppet to do certain things. And it was really fun. And I had no idea. That was forever ago, 20 years probably, maybe more. He approached me and he said, "When I was in high school, I was thinking of taking my own life."
Yeah.
And he said, "You and the director over there, Betsy," he said, "you made me feel special." And it was really incredible. I said, "I had no idea." He goes, "Of course you had no idea." And he said, "But I just wanted you to know."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, that makes you matter a little bit." You know, I was listening to somebody recently at one of the many things I go to, a pancake breakfast, to talk about theater, because that's me. I'll go to anything. Give me a free cup of coffee and I'll be there. This gentleman was talking about a mentor he had and how he was very young, and this guy brought him along and regarded him as a colleague, even though he was young and new. And he used an expression that I have now adopted as my own. He said, "This man gave me the gift of significance," which is huge.
That speaks volumes.
And I think about that, and I thought back to, I was doing cabaret in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, at the Walnut Street Theater, and I had this solo that I auditioned for, and I got it. A few months later, we go to rehearse. I'm all over it. I'm ruining it. I was getting all in my head. It wasn't working. Mm. It wasn't what they wanted, and I felt self-conscious, because most of the people on the show were these heavy hitters. And the director stopped rehearsal, and he put his arm around me. He walked me to the other side of the room, and he goes, "Ray, you got the job. You belong here." And he said, "Get out of your head. Go back and do it again. And if it doesn't go well, go back and do it again."
Yeah.
That's why it's called rehearsal. It has a repetitive nature to it.
Yeah.
When I think back, that's my example of being given the gift of significance, being told I belong and that I contribute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we can do that with the kids that come to us and that we go to, then our job is great. And that's in addition to the great professional season we're doing. But arts education can't be a maybe. It's got to be a sure thing. We've got to do it. And most of our grants are asking for money
to subsidize those.
To subsidize arts education. Because we offer such a low ticket price, the cost of doing the show has to be subsidized. We've been really good at getting kids to us. My goal in the next 3 years is to get us to go to them a lot more. I'd love to have a stable of these great main-based teaching artists who could just go out to the schools and meet their needs.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the next 6 months, we will have an education advisory committee that will have real live teachers on it.
Fantastic.
To find out what they want. What do they want us to provide? You know, how can we meet their curricular needs as opposed to just a fun little hour, you know?
Well, so it's, as you've been talking, so I have two prior theater kids on my staff. Right? So Becca's our director of marketing. Sam is our director of engagement. Both of them were theater kids still are active in theater.
They are.
Both of their roles are very different in terms of like what they do here at the mm-hmm. Chamber. And I can tell you that both of them are better at their jobs because of skills that they learned through theater, that they regularly practice in engagement with theater. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the value of improv and learning improv.
Oh my God,
to
yes.
leadership.
Yep.
To being able to be at the board presentation or in the room or in front of your customer, whatever it might be.
Talking in front of people is a skill.
Yes. And people, I think people sometimes discount that
yeah.
a little bit, right? And it's the same people who are also afraid of it. So they understand the challenge of it without, I think people think it's a natural
yeah.
gift.
Yeah.
And not that it's a skill that can be curated.
And there's some people who are innately good at it. But unfortunately, we're all expected to be able to do some of that
right.
some of the time. You know, in many of our positions.
Literally had somebody sit at the same spot this morning and say the same thing, that like was afraid of public speaking for forever and has had to get good
right.
at it because that's the gig sometimes.
You know, I was actually, believe it or not, a shy kid. I was always a very friendly kid, but I was very shy, especially with strangers, you know, mm-hmm. like, and being in front of people was frightening to me.
You sure overcame that.
I overcame it. Part of it is acting. If you act the part, well, you know, if you believe it, they'll believe it. I always tell actors that. If you believe what you're doing, and that's not me, that's Carol Burnett, Lucille Ball. They both said you have to believe what you're doing no matter how insane it is. If you believe it, they'll believe it. And it also makes the performance better.
Yeah.
But you just get up in front and talk.
Have you heard the term that's used more often these days? Maybe it was used before, and it's just my exposure to kind of neurodivergent culture and understanding it better, but the term masking.
Oh, yes.
So, right, so like there's a million ways that it shows up, but for somebody whom is introverted or is neurodivergent, they
yeah.
process in different ways, folks on the spectrum maybe, they'll name really clearly that like A, masking takes energy, and B, masking takes skill, and C, they're doing it
yep.
at the grocery store, at work, like almost all of the time.
Right.
That is an unprofessional version of acting.
Yeah.
And
it really comes down to the same
yeah.
thing. You want someone to believe that you're this person or that person. I do remember when I first became managing director at Mainstate, I had to do curtain speeches. And there was a difference between performing in a role and coming out on stage as myself.
Yeah.
To just come out on stage. And you never know what's going to happen. Like one time I went out, I said, good afternoon, I'm Ray Dumont, I'm the managing director. Welcome to Mainstate Music Theater. And out of the third row I hear, I love him. It was my high school English teacher. Like, hi, Mrs. Shapiro.
Oh, adorable.
Yeah, and I said, this woman is one of the reasons I love theater and the arts so much. I said, well, let's give her a hand. So I made a thing out of
See?
It.
See? But why would
but
you?
There were, but one of the things I decided, like, is that if I'm going to be a public speaker now, and God knows I've been speaking a lot in the last, since I took this job
You've
particularly.
You've been great.
What you see is just pure me.
Yeah.
I'm never going to put a facade out there.
Yeah.
And I won't be everybody's favorite, but at least you know exactly what you're getting if you decide to do business with me.
Yeah.
Or decide to be my friend, you know, or both.
For me, authenticity is, I don't know if it's equal to, but it's hand in hand with integrity. And those
mm-hmm.
are two values that I just kind of hold above so many others.
Yeah.
And I think in this day and age where there is so much inauthenticity, filters and AI this is what I look like on social media, or this is what my life looks, this is what my children look, this is what my
right.
mudroom looks like.
Yeah.
No. Right? Like I think that authenticity is and will continue to be prized in ways
truth
that it hasn't.
Will out.
Yeah, always. Right?
You know?
What is it? Sunlight's the best disinfectant?
Yeah.
I love that one. I'm
yeah.
a big fan. Sometimes you just got to bring it outside into the
oh, yeah.
sun.
Just
give it a little sunlight.
Let's all step into the light together.
Big fan.
And see how we all feel about
no,
that.
No, that's exactly right.
But I attribute some of that to years and experiences. You're the sum
yeah.
total of everything that's ever happened to you, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's mostly good. But you're all those things put together. And over time, mm-hmm. you filter everything out and you get down to what you really are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a wonderful example. I always talk about it when I'm directing a show. It's like, I said, we'll slowly realize what the show's going to take shape. And I said, it's the story of the sculptor. They say, how did you sculpt that beautiful elephant? And he said, I got a big block of marble and cut away everything that wasn't an elephant.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. That's how I can understand it.
Yeah.
That's my lens. Whoever said that, I'm very thankful to them because that's my lens. I cut away everything I can cut away, and then what's left is just me.
Yeah.
And then you never have to question if I'm anything else. The one caveat to like how blessed I am to be able to do this is that I work in an industry where being your authentic self is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a much more welcoming community than many other communities.
Yeah.
And it's a much more welcoming community than the present state of the world as well. And, you know, that'll be a whole other kind of navigation.
Yeah.
Where will my industry fit into the world as it exists right now? The arts reflect what's going on in the world constantly. You can find that all the way back to colonial days and then further over the seas, you know. Everything that's written, so much of what's written, I should say, is a reflection of what's going on and how people are feeling. You know, there are 9/11 pieces. There are pieces about mass shootings. There are pieces about administrations. There are pieces, and it's people telling stories. And instead of having a bunch of people yelling on CNN at each other and nobody's really listening, what I love about a live theater experience is that you do the piece, you tell the story, and what I draw from it and what the guy next to me draws from it might be two very different things. And I always pray that act three is the drive home, that somebody says, oh, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
The example I use is my husband at the time and I and my son were involved in the marriage equality campaign in 2009, which we didn't win that year.
Right.
But we were the commercial. Actually, my mother, God bless her, was the commercial, and we were in the background.
I love that.
Supposed to be our commercial, and she said something great, and it became
of
the commercial.
Of course. You never know when you need those commercials what's going to get
the French-Canadian meme, and suddenly she's the... And it was amazing, and people were so supportive, and it was incredible, and my son was just caught up in the whirlwind. But we lost. Mm-hmm. And BBC America came to our house, and they said, what happens now? I said, we keep going.
Yeah.
And I said, you know how we're going to do this? It's not going to be banners and debates and stuff. It's one person at a time.
Yeah.
I said, Rodney and I, that's my ex-husband, we volunteer for everything at school so that people can see that we're just a freaking family.
You're just dads.
That's all we are.
Yeah.
We're really no different than anyone else. And that it's not some mystery. And once somebody knows you, it's real hard to hate you.
No, that's exactly right.
You know? And so it's one person at a time. And in a strange way, I've morphed that into growing the public theater. I'm gonna get us where I want to be in the next years, one person at a time.
So tell me what your vision for all that the public theater is and the way that it's celebrated or changed or grown our region. What is your vision?
Luckily, what we do well, we do very well. We have our season. I hope more people will participate in our season over the years. You know, we want to grow our subscriber base.
And people can subscribe.
They can subscribe. And you can still subscribe. We have a 3-show subscription. If you saw Dracula, or even if you didn't see Dracula, you can subscribe to 3 shows instead of all 4 because one's gone by. But I'm hoping that more people will come to us. When I was working at the university, the president of the university, who I worked with very closely, was in the process of, it was called Transforming USM. And one of the things he said, the goal here is national recognition for regional excellence, and that's been stuck rattling around in my brain. I want us to hopefully be doing the new work and doing, you know, I don't know where that will go, and I'm not the artistic director, so I have to leave that in the arena of the artistic director, but certainly help to shepherd it along and help build that vision. But that's the season. There is so much time and space around the season to augment what we offer. You know, I'd love to, we're talking about maybe a co-production with another theater that will happen in our space. More concerts, more things that we can do that will bring people to our space, whether it's to see theater or live music or everything. Mm-hmm. People, we did the Johnny Cash thing this summer with my friend Scott.
My parents were huge fans.
Yeah, and Scott is you know, he's a rock star. And I was so pleased that so many people wanted to see that. And he's such a nice guy. I mean, truly one of the nicest people in the universe. But we had 2 performances booked. It almost sold out, so we added a 3rd. It almost sold out. It was so nice. And people were saying they were so appreciative to have something to do in the summer at the public, you know? And I'm hoping that we can create a wider range of things happening at the public and that we get noticed for doing such things, and that we can get to a place financially and structurally that we can take some risks and maybe do the new show that nobody knows, or create some relationship with another company that you wouldn't normally do, but we've got some of that artistic capital and capital to do it. And that's going to take some time. I also want our theater to be part of the community. And that's basically me right now. And I want them to know that the public theater participates in what's going on in the community. And that we can be an important part, whether we are just a gathering space or if we offer, you know, a space for other things to happen. We showed a film the other night for the People Who Tell the Truth, the Truth Tellers, which is going to on display. There was this documentary. It wasn't very well promoted by the organization that was doing it, but we opened our doors to them and we had them there. And I actually usually when I do something like that, I'll welcome them and I'll wait in my office until it's done. And I actually watched the documentary and it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Truly fascinating.
You were great about opening your doors for our Top Gun pitch off this year.
That was
year.
So much fun.
And that
fun.
Was a really fun collaboration.
I really
enjoyed
that.
And you had a silent auction.
Yeah, we had
a
silent auction going on, so gave people things to do.
Great twofer opportunity.
Yeah, we do need to, that's the other thing. I need to increase our base of people who are supporters of the theater. You know, I'm not saying everyone's going to suddenly give $10,000. That's not what we're doing. But we need to create a system where people who give are appreciated and stewarded and made to feel that what they're doing, like I need to earn their trust.
Yeah.
I need them to feel that what they're supporting is something they can believe in.
Yeah.
And that takes time. I'm a one-man band sometimes with this. And so that takes time.
You're a one-man band with like the cymbal on the back the big drum on the back and the harmonica on the front and the guitar. You're one hell of a one-man band.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. I mean, I truly do love it. I mean, I can't say I love it all the time.
No.
I used to say this to my son. I said, I will always love you, but I don't always like you.
Yeah.
Don't always like you.
That's a parenting mantra.
And that's, I mean, it truly is, you know.
You are super skilled with a national network of experiences, landing spots. Thank you for choosing to come home.
Well, I'm glad they chose me.
Yeah. But I mean, you applied.
I did.
Right?
I
and so like
it.
Yeah. And you are moving within that role. So
and it was funny.
Wonderful.
I was on the cusp of moving to Aspen, Colorado.
Now what does Aspen have on Lewiston and Auburn, Maine,
it's,
Ray?
It's different.
Yeah, totally different. Like I'm not putting it above or below,
no,
but obviously below.
I got the
right?
job and then they said, can you fly out for a week before you start to come to our big annual gala? And I went to their annual gala, and it was really fun, and the staff was so nice, and it was exciting. They showed me a couple of options of where I could live, and then they figured out rent and all that. And it was very exciting. That was midsummer. I'd never seen a gala like that. They raised over $1 million in one night. It was insane.
There's a lot of money in Aspen.
It falls out of trees.
there is.
And then, and everybody was wonderful. And then they said, toward the end of the summer, I was not sleeping, and I was not eating. Something was wrong. And I said, I can't leave. I said, my son's buried here. My family's still here. My mother's older. I don't want to leave Maine. This is my home. And so I called them and I said, you're going to hate this. And they're like, do it remote. You can do it remote. And he was like, my boss at the time, he goes, I said you could do it remote when we interviewed you. I said, I blocked that part out.
Yeah.
You know, I was always thinking in terms of moving.
Right.
You know, and it seemed like a good time and blah, blah, blah. So I tried it remote and he said, you know, you need to come to New York for a week in October for the board meeting. And we did and it was great. But I discovered I'm not an animal who can work remote.
Yeah, yeah. No, you need people.
I need people. I need to come to work every day. I need to have the frivolous conversation.
I feel like you would have wilted like a flower in the shade.
I had just moved into a gorgeous new apartment that I started hating because I was in it all day.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not for me. And what sealed it for me was when I went to New York for the board meetings, we all sat around our producer's dining room table to catch up and do all the slides for the board meeting the next day. And I was like, this is what that, I'm yeah. saying. We were throwing ideas back at each other, and it was so much fun.
I get my energy from yeah. interactions with other people, and I just start, like, my battery's like, meh.
Oh, it was so much fun. The board meeting was fun. We had it at the Actors Fund building in Times Square, and it was really wonderful. And we had this, one of the board members had us at her home, which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
She had a New York home.
Love that.
Literally at Park and 73rd, which is a line from Chorus Line.
See, yeah. That was meant to be for you.
Yeah,
that moment was supposed to come to you.
I literally got in a cab and said, Park and 73rd, and I think I giggled.
I was going to say, did you squeal a little bit? I said it out loud.
Oh, my God.
Take me away.
I was so excited about that. And, you know, I'm in this palatial apartment, and it was... But the idea of being with my colleagues was so great. And around that, like, I was already in the... in the hopper for an interview, yeah. and I knew that was going to happen. And
well, thank you. Thanks to the powers that be at the Public yeah. Theater that hired you.
I'm
but
gregarious.
They wouldn't have hired you if you hadn't, like, I don't know, shown some interest. So
yeah,
thank you.
I need people, and now I got people. Mm-hmm. I love my people.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah, my family's all here, which is great. They're all in the vicinity.
It's all as it should be.
Yeah, it's kind of all as it should be.
Yeah. But Mark.
Yeah.
Bring us home.
Hello.
wait. Ready? Mark did that for me at one of our last two episodes ago, and I died loving it. I was like, I don't know what does it, isn't it, shouldn't you? Anyway, he's been, you two have very much showbiz.
Yeah,
and I'm just along for the ride.
No.
Thanks, guys. Oh, no. Thanks for being so
leading
tolerant.
Leading an organization like this is showbiz. Might
wait,
be the circus,
right.
but it's showbiz.
You right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Our closing segment is Looking Back, Leading Forward, a reflective closing where we invite our guests to share advice or insights they would give to their younger self or to those with big ambitions in business or community leadership.
So over the course of our conversation today, Ray, you have both really clearly relayed that you take very seriously the way in which you recognize you have impact on
yeah.
people younger than you, people new to the career, regardless of age, people that are coming up through. So then here's where I'm going to target our limited time left mm-hmm. is what is one lesson or piece of wisdom that you would share with someone aiming to make an impact? Maybe in theater, maybe in arts and culture, maybe mm-hmm. not at all. What is the wisdom you would give with, because everything you've already shared
yeah.
is clear that what you're doing is to have an impact. The part you live for is the impact
yeah.
part, right? And so, like, for somebody who wants that, what would you tell them?
I use the same, it's the same process with performing. Yes, you want what you do to matter, mm-hmm. but don't make that the goal. Do something that means something to you, and if it makes an impact, and it probably will if it means yeah. that much to you, choose something that you care about greatly. And do that, as opposed to how can I make the biggest, like, you know, when you're in an organization, sometimes you have to say, how can I maximize my impact and
yeah,
all that?
Yeah.
But in the bigger, grander scale, for me, it's what can I do that's going to mean something to me that I can put 1,000% of my heart and soul into, as opposed to who's going to benefit from that? Because I worry about playing to the result.
Yeah.
With actors, one of the things I've always, and I've actually got into it with an actor once about this.
Something
like, for
I
instance,
to see, by the some, way.
For instance, when somebody is going to cry, they cry on stage. You can't just go, I'm sad, so I'm going to cry now. Because then it's fake and stupid.
Yeah.
And I always say, you didn't earn the cry. You didn't earn it. You've got to do the work that leads up to it. And there's this wonderful opera singer, Joyce DiDonato. She is a force of nature. And I watched this video of her coaching a student in a very emotional piece of opera. She said, don't go to recreate the result. Recreate the work, and the result will happen. And so tonight, you may not sob. You may just be moved, or maybe you'll be angry with this person or frustrated with this person. Because you know what? Those are real emotions. And if it's real on stage, the audience is going to know.
Yeah.
And it's so good. When that conversation starts to happen between the actor and the audience, it's why we do it. It feels that good. It's a charge. It's adrenaline. I was working with an actor who literally came on stage sobbing. And I went, stop. What's going on here? And she goes, well, I'm sad. I said, really? Hell of a process you have. I said, well, I need to know more about this. I said, everything that's happened to you with the character was Guido, you and Guido through the night, has to arrive at this moment. And I said, just to come on and cry is not enough. And I was catching her at it a lot. And so I finally said, I will be at every performance watching. And I actually, the show, the lead character wore a white shirt and a straight black tie, and I would wear that when I'd go to the show. And I said, if you see a bald man in the back of the theater with a white shirt and a black tie, you better be performing the way I ask you to, because it needs to be that way. There was one night I couldn't go, and I found a bald man to wear a white shirt and a black tie. Isn't that embarrassing?
I think it's ideal.
It's ridiculous. But for me, is don't go for the result. Do the work. Everything else will come out of it. And not everything's going to, like, because if you're worried about X, Y, and Z taking notice of you, that's all you're thinking about.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being really good at whatever it is you plan to do. If I want to help with this cause, then help with that cause.
Yeah.
Because you know that's going to have some kind of impact. But it might not be recognition impact.
Yeah.
You know, it took me 20 years to find out I had an effect on this young man.
Yeah.
Thank God he's still with us.
Yeah.
But I don't take credit for that.
Right.
You know, and I wasn't there to save him. You know, I was in the right place when he was there.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever heard it put that way. That advice has never landed that way with me. The way that it's landing in this moment. And thank you.
Oh, sure.
Genuinely thank you. I mean, we at the Chamber, my team, I have an incredible team. We focus on how we're having impact all the time. I do, like you, believe that if we're focusing on doing the things that we're best suited to do, that we're called to do, that we find our purpose in, that's where the impact will come from.
And it doesn't preclude goals and outcomes and all that things. Those are all
good work plans.
Yeah, you've got to measure. You can't manage what you can't measure, right? In the larger sense, you as a human walking the earth, how can I make an impact?
Yeah.
Is more like, how can I matter? And that means doing what you love, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Not everybody gets to, and I don't take it for granted that I get to work in my industry.
Same.
But it's all about doing the work and being really good at it.
Yeah.
And helping other people along the way. I take to heart my mission with young people and with young professionals. Mm-hmm. When I was the intern director at Main State Music Theater, those people were my kids for 3 months every year. And they're still out there and they're all doing such good work now. And it makes me very proud that they count me among their friends.
And that's impact.
Yeah.
That is significant impact.
When I see them on TV playing a murderer or an SUV and I call them up, I'm like, you creep.
you made me believe.
Yeah, it's hard when you see your friends be evil. One of the interns from 2001, when I was managing director, her name is Robin Herter. She grew up around here in Maine, and I gave her first professional job. She has now already been nominated for a Tony Award.
Oh, Mom, great job.
She was nominated for Moulin Rouge, and she's about to star in Smash on Broadway this spring. You know, she's a friend, and I care about her.
And you're going to go get tickets.
Oh, we're going to go see it for sure.
Yeah.
But like we went to see her in Moulin Rouge. It was pre-pandemic, and she has this wonderful life. She met this wonderful man working at Main State. You're welcome, because I decided I'm the reason because I hired them both that summer. It really wasn't me. And they have an amazing kid, like this beautiful, happy kid, and they have a good life together. And she's very clear when she's very much on social media because she has a lot of followers and stuff. She's very clear that it's not all rosy.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, like she says, sometimes mama's body hurts, you know, but I'll tell you this, you know, when I take such great joy in other people's success, and if someone says, what's one of your talents, is that I'm still able to see so much joy in other people's success. I don't see it as a competition. And she went into Chicago on Broadway. She had already been in years ago as Mona, one of the Cell Block girls. She was Velma Kelly, which means she comes up in the elevator during all that jazz. And I watched that video of her going up in that elevator, and I sobbed like a baby.
I love that.
I was so proud of her. She just comes up and does the hands, and you're like...
You and I are going to have a sob fest.
Oh,
I don't know when it's going to be. I don't know that we'll need to plan it. It might be spontaneous. I get the feeling that it could very well.
I can spontaneously cry as good as anyone.
I'm in. Yeah. I'm 100%
But I always do the work.
Oh, my cries are authentic. They're messy.
Yep.
The like snobby, blubbery.
Oh yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, you will never question if it's coming from a real place. I did hear
a weird and wild piece of direction that actually makes sense to me, and when I directed Cabaret, I used it. In certain scenes, sometimes you tell an actor, if you want to cry, fight. Fight like a dog not to cry.
Mm.
And that will be your sweet spot.
I do feel like that.
And I did that with my Sally Bowles when she sang the title number, and it was astounding.
And effective.
Oh, yeah.
This smile that comes along.
Yeah, I know.
That was like jack-o'-lantern smile, right?
I know.
Like
smart actors are really my sweet spot. I love smart that. Actors. Actors that ask great questions.
Yeah.
Actors that really want to explore it with you. I mean, everything I do in the arts has a life component, you know, a life skill component. And I've had my share of sadness too. And the arts community and the people that I get to be with all the time are the reason that I got through it.
I love that.
They lifted me up. And I'll do the same for anybody else in a heartbeat.
So we're going to end on that.
Okay.
Which is, that is what you're doing for our community.
Amen.
So I hope folks take a chance.
Yeah.
Go to a show if they haven't.
See what we do.
If they have, they should subscribe.
Yeah.
Go.
Check out what we do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you go to the website, it's www.thepublictheater.org. If you do publictheater.org, you're going to get the one in New York.
That's a different one.
Yeah, and they're really good, but they're not ours.
Don't donate to them.
No.
Don't buy those tickets.
Do you know Danai Gurira, the actress?
Mm.
She wanted to make a donation to the Public Theater in New York, and one of her minions accidentally made the donation to the public in Lewiston.
I don't feel bad about that.
Now we had to give it back.
Ah, boo.
It wasn't while I was here. It was before I got here.
Well, I love it.
But
thank
I see
you.
Her on TV. I'm like, you could have supported us.
Go find out the way theater and live
one person at a time. We're going to rebuild. We're going to build our audience and build our recognition one person at a time.
I can't wait for us to be part of that.
Yeah, me
continue
too.
Continue to be part of that.
Yeah.
Not like we're stepping into a new
space. And we have a great chamber, and I've said that to you.
Thanks.
Not saying it for the podcast.
Yeah.
It's good to have a chamber that's so active and so supportive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I personally have been transformed from public performances, from theater. I've seen what it does for misfit kids. Mm-hmm. I've seen the way it's impacted my own children. Like, I'm just a firm believer as a person.
Yeah.
And I bring that to the lens with having read all of those studies we talked about earlier. I know full well that even if I hated theater and didn't care for arts and culture, which I cannot imagine a life like
right.
that. But even if I did, I couldn't sit in this role and deny the very real economic impact
right.
of the work that you're doing, how it supports our hospitality industry, how it attracts people here, for people who... Like, those are very obvious kind of connections that you can make. But I would say, as I've talked to executives who run some of our biggest firms, biggest organizations, biggest institutions, they are able to talk about professional theater being in the community that somebody is considering coming to live or work in.
Right.
And it is vital for them, any industry. It is a vital piece of the story we need to remind people.
And the public theater was started by four couples who said, this town needs a professional theater. There's a restaurant owner in Lewiston who said on one of those Zoom meetings, the hospitality one.
My connecting over calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, he's so tired of people trashing Lewiston.
Yeah.
And he said, we're the second largest city in Maine, and we should start acting like it.
Damn right.
Boy, did that rattle around in my head.
Yeah.
I thought
good.
That was good.
Good.
There are some incredibly capable people mm-hmm. who are dedicated to making Lewiston Auburn better, and they just need a little help.
Some other people to maybe take the chance and believe that what they're saying is true. Go get that meal. Go visit the theater and be like, oh, we really are this great.
We really
do have nice things, and we deserve them.
The reason we're called the public theater is that we believe the theater's for everybody.
Yeah.
We keep our prices low so that anybody who wants to come to the public can come to the public.
I love that.
That's an important part of our mission, and certainly my mission, my charge.
Take Ray's mission to heart and go. Help him feel his impact.
I'm practically
go see a
always
show.
There. I'm delightful. Come see me.
Yes, it's true. Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Thanks. We appreciate it. Thank you, Mark. Anything we missed?
I just have two quick things for Ray.
Sure.
As a son, I want to thank you for being your genuine self. I took my mom to see Johnny Cash.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely loved it.
Great.
And
job.
Ray came over after the show and talked to us. And my mom's like, who is that? I said, that's Ray Dumont. He's the executive director of the Public Theater. And she goes, he's the big wig. I said, yes, he is. He runs the show.
Moms know.
And so we got home that night, and that's what she told my dad. I met Johnny Cash, and I met the big wig at the Public Theater.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
And I took her to see Dracula, and we're hanging out in the lobby, and she goes, do you think Ray's here? And before I could say yes, he came over to talk to us.
Aww.
And it meant the world to her.
That's, again, one person at a time.
Yeah.
I want to meet people. It's great. And she's such a sweetheart.
She
oh
is.
Oh, my God.
So I
love what a good son you are, too.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to know that.
I love it.
The other thing is, at the top of the show, you mentioned moving a show from 7:30 to 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I did a stand-up show last week at the Mystic Theater in Rumford. There's 150 people there. And one of my bits, I talk about being in my 50s. And how difficult it is sometimes, and how you want things catered to you,
mm-hmm.
right? And this wasn't even part of my set. Hadn't even thought of it until that moment. It was a 7 o'clock show. At the end of the bit, I'm like, hey, and how many people were psyched to learn this was a 7 o'clock show tonight? 3/4 of the audience erupted.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah, because I think all their other shows are like 8:30.
Yeah.
Do you know how I gauge everything when I look at, like, when I have to be at a show and I have to when I'm working at the show? And, you know, I most of the time I stay all the way to the end. On rare occasions I'll leave early if there's something I have to do, but I'll stay. But I do the math and I say, what time can I be in my jammies having cocoa?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, I've turned into that person.
100%.
You know what? I'm not sad about it.
No. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this.
I loved it.
Good.
Yeah, anytime.
Thanks. I don't know if you actually mean that, but I'm not afraid of calling you again.
No, I'll do it. Oh, God, I'll do it.